You're listening to the cycling podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
Hello from stage 8 of the Vuelta a España. My name is Richard Moore. I'm not in some Ibiza nightclub, despite the beats in the background. I'm standing at the summit of La Camperona, an incredible climb that finishes today's stage. The profile for today's stage pretty much looked like Pinocchio's nose in reverse, just a long, straight, flat line, and then straight up at the end. 3 kilometres of, I'm not going to say vertical because that's not what it is, but 20%, very narrow road, very bumpy at the bottom, and a real test for the riders in today's really crucial stage. I'm on my own at the moment, left Daniel Freib at the foot of the climb by the team buses, so I'm going to try and intercept the riders as they cross the line here in the next 45 minutes or so. The stage is still going on. There's a break with 10 minutes. Looks like one of those guys will win. One of those guys will win. But of course, what happens behind is interesting. Big day for Darwin Atapuma, who is in the red jersey of race leader. And at the start this morning in Villalpando, I spoke to his sports director at BMC Racing, Max Chiandri. Here is Max. Max, you must be very pleased with how the Vuelta is going so far. You've got a man in the red jersey. Big day for him today.
Yeah, it's a big day, you know, and it's actually what we live on. We live on days with Darwin. You know, we came here to the Vuelta with the GC ambition with Samuel Sanchez. TJ has a bit of a free spirit in this race, and Darwin obviously was like trying to nail down a day, a stage win, you know, like he did in Swiss, like we tried in the Giro, and now we found the jersey after a break. So it's a daily plan with him, you know. And today, as you said, it's a pretty hard finish, especially last 2.5K, really, really hard. You know, he's motivated, he's good, he's strong, he's got his best numbers everywhere on all the SRM files. So conditions there, motivation's there. And we just have to see.
He's a Colombian and he's a great climber, obviously. Can he hold the jersey today?
Yeah, I think today he can hold the jersey. I just see, you know, his rival number one right now is Valverde. But I think if they want to look at their own garden, I think with Quintana, it's going to be maybe Valverde a little bit working for him. Obviously, I think if the race comes to like a K to go and like the GC contenders are there, then, and if Valverde's there, then he can be, he could try and go for the win. He's a smart guy, Valverde. You know, he gets the opportunities whenever they come up. You know, so and then for Darwin, he's still got a bit of time on the GC leader, so he's got that little cushion and gap what he can try and handle. So,
what's he like, Darwin? Is he seems like a very very sort of placid character, very. Very relaxed. What's he like? How's he fit into
super
the team?
Super down to earth, smiling. He's just like, every day he's like, I can't believe it. You know, this jersey obviously has just picked his whole life up in good terms, obviously. And he's just really living the moment, living the dream. And every day he says to me, you know, like, I can't believe the power it gives me having the jersey, how good I feel, like how I can move in the peloton, you know. And I said, that's leadership, that's confidence, that's mind. This mind is connected to body. There's a lot of different issues, you know, despite looking at numbers sometimes. So, you know, he's going through all that all these different phases of really enjoying it, and hopefully, you know, we'll be in the jersey this evening.
And just finally on Sammy Sanchez, I mean, he's not a young rider, but he seems to be going very well, and he's come here as your leader.
Yeah, no, he's a totally different guy. He's one of the most professional guys. I wouldn't say the most, but one of the most in our team. Really, I remember after I did Burgos with him as DS, and he went day after, finished Burgos to see 2 or 3 stages. So he's really prepared it. He's in a different act than Darwin. Obviously, he's not an impulsive rider. He really thinks about stuff, and and he has to be kind of looking at the outside the window, just seeing how our his main rivals are going to move, you know. So unfortunately yesterday we got caught out by a little bit of a bad moment. It's nothing to do with them and ours. It's just like he stopped for what he had to stop for, and they just put on the stick, and we had to stop half of the team to just bring him back. And we killed a few people, you know. So it kind of unfolded a little bit different than what we expected. We had in a way a free ride because Trek and other teams were pulling, and then he got caught in the crash with Contador, but nothing. He had nothing. So we'll see.
So that was Max Chiandri. You're back with me in Ibiza. I should stress, I will be joined by Daniel later on, perhaps another guest too, if we can find Francois Thomas or somebody to join us. But I'll certainly be hooking up with Daniel when the stage has finished. There'll also be Lionel's tale of the Etapa. But as I speak, the Etapa is not finished, so we'll hear that as soon as the stage is done. I realise I undersold the final climb a little bit. It's actually 22% in places near the foot of the climb, so very, very steep and nasty indeed. Max Chiandri there, some people might be surprised to hear that Samuel Sanchez is the team leader, and as I'm watching the big screen here, BMC are on the front, just controlling things, not exactly chasing, but controlling things for Darwin Atapuma. Samuel Sanchez, 38 years old, and there are one or two people who fancy him to win the Vuelta, believe it or not. I spoke to our colleague Fran Reyes this morning, the Spanish journalist, and he tips Sanchez to really do something quite amazing in this Vuelta, which would be extraordinary. And I don't think he's many people's favourites, but we'll see what happens. And we'll see, of course, if Atapuma can hold on to the jersey today. It's set to be very exciting and interesting. Not unique, but a very unusual type of climb. It'll be interesting to see if Chris Froome rides it the way he has been riding all the climbs, which has been managing his effort very carefully, sometimes getting dropped near the bottom and coming back. There's not much road for him to come back on today. But when they came up here 2 years ago in 2014, that's exactly how he rode it. Managed his effort very carefully there and rode extremely well. So let's see what happens. It's set to be a thriller. Okay, I've bumped into Eva Marisa at the summit here from Eurosport in Portugal. You commentate and present Eurosport in Portugal, is that right?
Hi, Richard. Yes, indeed. I'm a Portuguese commentator and also some cycling races. Obviously, the women's cycling that now is very strong coming up on Eurosport.
Also, you were at the Tour de France as well. But you came up to me yesterday, Eva, and you gave me a hard time. You reprimanded me for not having, we haven't featured the Portuguese riders enough, and there are a few of them riding the Vuelta. Tell us who is riding the Vuelta from Portugal.
Well, first and foremost, José Gonçalves, who was a major player last year in the Vuelta, breakthrough, Grand Tour for him. It was his maiden Grand Tour, and he was knocking on the door of that win, almost made it. I think, if memory serves me right, it was top five finishes. It was an amazing performance.
And Machado as well is another one, of course.
Yes, Thiago Machado, who obviously rides for Katusha. He will keep riding for Katusha next season. Thiago is a very, very aggressive rider. He defines himself, I run on instinct. He says that he doesn't look at his, Garmin at all, just at the watts the moment he attacks, which is very interesting. He's looking for a stage win. Let's see if it happens for him. I hope so. He's feeling very good.
More generally, Eva, tell us about cycling in Portugal. I wouldn't call it a backwater in terms of cycling, but when we talk about the big cycling countries in Europe, we talk about France and Spain and Italy, Belgium and Portugal and Holland, and Portugal tends to be overlooked. I mean, it produces a few good riders rather than lots of professionals. How popular is cycling in Portugal?
Well, cycling was very popular, I would say, 70s, 80s, early 90s in Portugal, and then we went through a lull, sort of like, the whole doping situation kind of affected cycling in Portugal a lot, especially the national teams. But now it's up on the rise. We have great talents in the World Tour. Nelson Oliveira is one of them, riding for Movistar, obviously, on his first year, 2-year contract. He was a very, very good acquisition, I would say, for Movistar. He did wonderful in the Tour. He's much more than a time trialist. I think he proved that much, you know, standing by Nairo Quintana, not just on the flat. He's very strong on the flat. Also, a very good performer on the classics. I'm very keen to see what the future has in store for Nelson, who is very, very gradually improving. And he lost a little bit of weight for the Tour, obviously, but next season he'll also, you know, go to Roubaix and Flanders and try his luck there. I think that was what Movistar had in mind when he was contracted, so it's very interesting.
I don't know if that's your helicopter arriving there, Eva. I was going to ask you about the Tour of Portugal as well. I think that's Daniel Freeb's favourite tour. He calls it the Hipsters Grand Tour. That probably Daniel arriving actually there. He calls it the Hipsters Grand Tour. What's the Tour of Portugal like?
Well, the Grandissima, yes. There was a golden age for Volta a Portugal. Now, I think due to its place in the calendar, it's just before the Vuelta. It's hard to attract, you know, the big teams, but it's a very competitive race. I think those who have the chance to compete in that race, they all come back with the same feedback. It's hard, ultra hard, very complicated climbs, fast-paced, very hot temperatures.
Eva, where can people find you on Twitter?
Well, my handle is Eva Marisa, so that's where you can find me. And looking forward to answer any questions you might have about Portuguese riders.
Lots of Portuguese cycling chat there. Thanks very much. We'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you, Richard.
Well, they're on the climb now. It's Katusha rider Jonathan Restrepo, 21 years old, from Colombia, another Colombian. Not a typical Colombian, though. He is quite bulky. He looks more like a ruler than a climber, but he's away on his own with a decent lead. I'm not sure he'll survive the climb. Let's find out. And behind them, the bunch is, as you would expect, racing to the foot of the climb, as if it's a, you know, lead out for a bunch sprint. Etix Quickstep up there. Not really entirely sure why. Cannondale there, Sky there, obviously. Orica Bike Exchange there as well. And Tinkoff, quite visible, which might bode well for Alberto Contador nursing his crash injuries and bandaged up like a mummy today. So let's see what happens on this climb to finish. Well, Sergei Lagutin won the stage for Katusha there with a late break, a three-man sprint really for the line. I'm not sure many of us expected that. Lower down the mountain, we saw Froome accelerate, Contador go with him. Valverde dropped after Puma's gone, but Quintana has gone over the top of Froome and is looking extremely good. Hey, lots of sort of shuffling around of the pack in the top 10. But for the comprehensive tale of the etapa, let's go over to Lionel Burney. Over to you, Lionel.
Thanks, Richard. Well, you witnessed a cracker today, and it was a day that was all about Nairo Quintana, who took the leader's red jersey from his compatriot Darwin Atapuma on the first mountaintop finish of the race. The stage win went to Sergei Lagutin of Katusha, who was part of an 11-man break that gained almost 11 minutes and still had a big advantage as they hit the final, well, the only climb of the day. Lagutin's teammate Jonathan Restrepo, another Colombian, laid the foundations, getting away on his own on the climb, and it was not until the final couple of kilometres, when they reached one of the steepest parts of the climb, that Restrepo cracked. That left Peter Seri, Lagutin, Axel Domon and Perry Kemener, who were also part of that 11-man break, to fight out the finish. And it was the veteran Russian Lagutin who got it, dropping Domon and Kemener in the last couple of 100 metres. And that left all of the attention on the GC battle further down La Camperona. Atapuma was in trouble quite early on, and the damage at the line was significant. He's now 6 overall, a minute and 36 seconds behind Quintana. Froome accelerated, trying to drop Contador, and he did have Contador in difficulty, but then he fell to the counter-attack from Quintana. Contador recovered too, showing little effect of the crash that he suffered yesterday, and he overtook Froome. It was a real ding-dong battle on the mountain. And at the line, Quintana gained 33 seconds on Froome and now leads Valverde overall by 19. Froome is in third at 27 seconds and Esteban Chavez is fourth at 57. Contador has risen up the classification to seventh at 139. It's another uphill finish tomorrow on the second category Alto di Nanenco, and Quintana will be in red, Gianni Miersman still leads the points competition, Lagutin is now king of the mountains, and Valverde is in the white combination leader's jersey. Back to you on the mountain, Richard.
Okay, the riders are sort of arriving at the summit now. I can see just over here a very cool looking Leopold Koenig, the Team Sky rider, who is, well, everybody else, I mean, I just was standing by Chris Froome there, and he was bent over the handlebars, heaving, and in a real state. I was told not to speak to him, or not try to speak to him. So I'm gonna go over now and try and grab word with Leopold Koenig, who is sitting on his bike, drinking a can of juice, looking like he's not just ridden up a very steep climb. We're at the summit here. You look very fresh.
Yeah, I'm fresh. I'm fresh. You know, I have 20 race days this year, so it was all or nothing here. So I feel fresh, and that's important. The legs are there, and that was a little bit worrying me with such a few racing days, but I'm fine.
You're still well placed overall then. I mean, I don't know how, if you saw what happened up ahead, but Quintana gained a bit of time on Froome, as did Contador, but you still feel pretty confident with still a lot of the race still to come.
I think Froome in general is stronger than Nairo. It was just one day out of another 10, so you can't judge anything from today. I think it's pretty close. Of course, Quintana showed some strength, so maybe he's going to be the biggest threat to our ambitions.
I mean, this is a very particular kind of climb, isn't it? Maybe not typical of some of the climbs that will come later. Is it not necessarily something that we should read too much in today's result?
Yeah, it's the world specialty, you know. Especially for me, it's not a great climb, but we will see. We have one more to go, one more like that in Covadonga or something like that, and then we got some more kind of Alp stages, kind of tour stages. So let's hope for a pure tour stages.
So that was Leopold Koenig. Froome is now giving interviews. I'm going to put my mic in his general direction and try and grab a little bit of what he had to say on a mildly disappointing day for him, but let's hear what he has to say.
Yeah, really, really tough climb. Of course, Nairo's showed he's in really good condition. Chapeau, he did a really good ride today.
How did you see the arrivals? Were you surprised by Nairo, but also by Alberto Contador?
Yeah, I mean, Alberto did great. I mean, especially after his crash yesterday, shows that he's a fighter, and he's come back really strong today.
And over here, I can spot Hugh Carthy, the young British rider, Caja Rural team, joining Cannondale Drapac next year. He has been conspicuous by his presence at the rear of the peloton most of the race so far, but he rode much better today. Here is Hugh Carthy. Hugh, we're into some of your favourite terrain now. I mean, maybe not today's climb. How did you find that climb today?
It wasn't my cup of tea to start off with, but I've been kind of skulking at the back for the past week now, so I wanted to try myself out a bit, open myself up and give it a go. And I wanted to try and get in the break this morning to try and with a view of making it to the finish, but sod's law, it wasn't in it, and it ran away with quite easily. It ran away, but that's the way it goes sometimes. As you say,
you've been noticeable at the back a lot the first few days. Has that been a deliberate sort of strategy to ride into it a wee bit because the climbs come later?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I don't know. I've tried to seek advice coming into the Vuelta, and the advice people are giving me is just better to start off a bit steady. And I don't know, maybe I've taken that to the extreme. But
it's conservative.
Yeah, it's conservative, but at the same time, it is slightly disappointing some days when you see the race going up ahead and you're just thinking one more day, and the days do tick by. I mean, it doesn't feel like 2 minutes ago since we're starting in Galicia, and now we're starting the ninth day tomorrow. So,
and how are you finding your first Grand Tour? Is there anything that sort of puts it on a level above other races, other World Tour races that you've done?
I think more the importance of it, I think, is you see it going into the climb at the bottom, there's guys that don't have a chance of winning on here, but they want to give it a go and try and get into the start of the climb first. It's I don't know, it's a matter of pride, it's a matter of it's the biggest race of the year for a lot of people, myself included, so every second counts, you know. But no, today I felt good, confident, and I decided to give myself a bit of a test, throw the dice, and well, I didn't come away too badly. I thought the legs were okay, and on the tough ramps it's hard to find a rhythm, but I feel more confident and happier now, and hopefully I can from here on in I can give it a shot.
Yeah, good, healthy, and looking forward to some of the high mountains to come.
Yeah, that's the main thing, good health. Touch wood, I've not had any crashes so far and not had any illness. We've had a few incidents of bad luck in the team, nasty crashes, and we've had a couple of riders nearly wiped out with illness, so I'm fairly happy going nearly at the halfway point and not too far from the first rest day, and then now I'll just give it everything before the rest day, and then take stock, recover, and really, really give it a good shot in the last two-thirds of the race, last third of the race, I suppose.
So that was Hugh Carthy, happy Hugh Carthy. And there's a fight breaking out behind me, by all these things. And here's Stephen de Jong, the coach of Alberto Contador at Tinkoff. Alberto obviously hurt today, but he rode very well. You'd be pretty happy.
Yeah, no, we are also a bit surprised by his performance today. He was in a lot of pain this morning, and after the warm-up, yeah, he said, okay, it will be better during the ride, but that he could do this today after yesterday, that was good news.
Two more tough days, but you must be confident that he'll have an opportunity to recover and perhaps be a contender in this race.
Well, let's hope so. We have to take it day by day now. Today was obviously a very good day. Tomorrow is less hard, the final climb, but the day after is really hard again, so let's hope he does a good performance again there.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
Thank you very much to Eurosport for sponsoring the cycling podcast. Of course, they are showing the Vuelta live every day. I've rejoined. I'm off the mountain. What a palaver that was. And I'm with Daniel Freib. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, Richard.
How was your day?
Relatively eventful.
Well, it was quite a day, wasn't it? You were down at the team buses. I was up the mountain. What a strange place that was. 1,700 metres high, tremendous views up there, and it's a lovely sort of small mountain range that we're surrounded by. We're in Leon now, where we're staying tonight. You heard from various people in the first part of the podcast there, including Stephen de Jong, surprised at Alberto Contador's performance today. We heard from Hugh Carthy, who showed the first glimmer of form, I suppose. He wasn't up there with leaders, but he did okay, and others. And it was an exciting day, wasn't it?
It was, and it started on a very exciting note as well, when Alberto Contador emerged from his team bus to rapturous applause, which he always gets every day here at the Vuelta.
You were waiting for him there, weren't you?
I was, and he was taped up with a very patriotic use of kinesio tape, red and yellow.
He was very colourful, wasn't he?
In the Spanish colours, yeah, big bandages. And gauze on his, I think, on his right arm, a lot of kinesio tape on his left leg, and kind of in sort of what's the James Brown, the famous James Brown video where
we need Lionel Burney here to do his James Brown impression,
where he comes on stage pretending to be hurt, and I think, is it? Oh, I'm not sure.
Have you witnessed Lionel's James Brown impression?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's amazing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, it was quite theatrical. He came out, he got on his turbo trainer, didn't want to talk to the press, but we watched him warm up, and you know, there was some grimaces. He was sort of interacting with the crowd, but he looked very pained. Stephen de Jong, the director sportif, looked worried. Faustino Munoz, the mechanic, looked very worried. And at that point, and having spoken to Stephen de Jong, you really didn't particularly expect him to, well, you thought that he might not even finish the stage, let alone the Vuelta at that point, and let alone perform well in the stage. And I was quite astonished to see him anywhere near the front as they started the final climb to La Camperona. And indeed, he performed extremely well, didn't he?
He did. I called Stephen de Jong his coach. I think he is his coach, isn't he? He is a DS at Tinkoff, but he does coach Alberto Contador, an unlikely partnership in a lot of ways. But anyway, Contador at the finish as well, still strapped up you know, after the stage, he still looked in a lot of pain. He was still moving very stiffly off the bike, a lot of grimacing. And he did say that sometimes you're worse 2 days after a crash. So, you know, playing down his chances. But tomorrow's not quite so hard. This was a real test for him today. And we've seen him at the Vuelta before, just right out of his skin and stage these incredible comebacks. I don't think he's out of it, because he might have a chance to recover from these injuries that he's suffered. And, you know, we saw today Chris Froome, who we thought was in great form and who Francois Thomazeau predicted to win today and sort of cement his place as a favourite. We saw a sort of crack from, you know, it's a strange climb, isn't it? So let's not read. But Froome did have a little wobble.
Yeah, and I think that is the real sort of brain teaser as far as the Vuelta is concerned. Well, it has been both up until now and will be going forward. Just which riders go well on which climbs, because I think you can almost divide the Vuelta climbs into two categories. You've got this very short, well, quite short, very, very steep, almost walls like we saw today, like we saw the other day in Etzero. And it may just be that different riders thrive on those climbs. And, you know, Esteban Chavez talked about that this morning. He didn't ride particularly well today. He didn't fare particularly
expected
well.
More from him, actually.
Expected more from him, but he said that the Vuelta wasn't going to be won on climbs like the one that concluded today's stage. It was going to be won in, you know, perhaps in on the Obisque, on the stage finish to Goret.
As Koenig told us earlier.
Yeah,
well,
in the Pyrenees. And, you know, there are some longer climbs later in the race as well. And, so today I would tread with some kind of caution before we read too much into today's result.
I think Koenig thinks they're going to the Alps rather than the Pyrenees. If I remember correctly, I think he referred them to them as the Alps. I could be wrong.
They're not the Dolomites.
Definitely not the Dolomites. One thing I would say, I described the climb earlier today as, first of all, 20%, then 22%. In fact, I was later told it's 25% in places. I don't know. These measurements are difficult, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, AS, the Spanish newspaper today, said that it classed the Camperona climb second in the all-time list of Vuelta climbs, the steepest gradients of Vuelta climbs, 29.3%, I think it said, or 28.3%, the steepest ever, according to them, was the Etzero climb that we did the other day.
One thing that's worth saying, there was a huge crowd on the climb. A lot of them had walked up from the car park at the bottom, and they were, after all the trouble at the Tour de France with the crowd, I might have missed it, but I didn't spot a single incident of a spectator running alongside a rider, flags near riders. There was very little interference with the riders. It seemed that the spectators really stood back, applauded their efforts, and respected the riders. And that, I think, is worth saying today. They were very well behaved, and that is a testament to them and perhaps to the police who were there as well. So, well done.
Yeah, and again, it was a very spectator-friendly final climb. Certainly, it was always going to be spectacular. Short, you could pack a lot of people in, and people came from far and wide. And again, it bears repeating that slightly in spite of themselves, but also because of good and clever and astute planning that they've done, the Vuelta organisers have really found their race back in a very prominent position in the calendar and in everyone's kind of estimations. I mean, the course is very dramatic. It's very exciting, great field. And, oh no, we've got a hen party.
We've got a hen party.
We've got a hen party. Not the first time on the cycling podcast.
Whoever you are, wherever you ride, whatever the reason, Rafa exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories, and vibrant clubhouses and communities all over the world. See rafa.cc for more information.
Thank you very much indeed to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast. Wonderful sponsors that they are. A little reminder that we put out a couple of extras last week. One was a conversation with Joe Dombrowski at the Rafa Cycle Club in Spitalfields. The other was a conversation with Bradley Wiggins at the Rafa Cycle Club in Soho. So thank you very much to Rafa. Daniel, overall now, we've got Nairo Quintana first. We've got Valverde second. He's a great fighter, isn't he, Valverde? He was off. He sort of seemed to struggle at the start of the climb, fought his way back, finished with Froome. We've got Froome in third, we've got Chavez fourth, and Alberto Contador up to seventh. What we have is, well, we have Quintana with now a lead on Froome, and he took quite a bit of time out of him today, considering how short the climb was. He's on the front foot, and this is what I said the other day, that he had to be on the front foot in taking on Froome. He looked really happy, actually, at the finish. He was smiling very broadly on the podium. And we've got a really interesting race, a really fascinating battle ahead of us, I think.
Yeah, and interestingly, I think Froome feels diminished compared to how he was riding at the Tour de France. I asked him at the finish whether he felt that had he brought his form from July into this race, he would have lost as much time today. He said no, he's certainly not riding quite as well. I think he's a bit heavier as well, looking at him. Certainly last week on the eve of the Vuelta, when we met up with him, I thought he was carrying probably a couple more kilos than he was at the Tour de France. And so you got him not as strong as he was at the Tour de France, and Quintana apparently stronger. So the balance of power
does seem to put on weight quite easily for him. I mean, you remember the test that he did last year, just on the eve of the Vuelta, a few weeks after the Tour, and he'd put on a few kilos since the Tour.
And the other point I suppose we should make is that Movistar really bring their A-team to the Vuelta. It's a group of riders that have a lot of experience riding together, have done a lot of big races together, and Team Sky's Vuelta lineup is really a bit of an assortment of guys who do know and have ridden with Chris Froome a lot, and riders who simply needed a Grand Tour to round off their season or to fill a hole in their calendar. And I think they're probably still finding their feet together a little bit.
There's an interesting one as well, because, I mean, they've lost Mikhail Kwiatkowski. Leopold Koenig is up to fifth overall. That, you know, he obviously rode extremely well today. Peter Kennick is still fairly highly placed overall. Now, Kennick is under contract next year. I have a feeling that Koenig isn't, and that he may be on his way out at Team Sky, and therefore there could be an incentive for him to ride for himself as well.
I think he's definitely on his way out, isn't he?
Yeah. So, you know, your Leopold Koenig, I don't know if he's got a contract for next year. You would think he would get one. He's fifth overall in the Vuelta. There's potentially a very good result for him. Daniel, you can't nod in a podcast. That just doesn't work. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's not been the best of times for Leopold Koenig at Team Sky, has it? I mean, he got some freedom last year at the Giro d'Italia and rode pretty well once Richie Porte had pulled out of the race. Then he was taken to the Tour de France, and I think there's been a bit of an issue there with how he's integrated with the rest of the team. I think certainly increasingly at Team Sky has been of quite a strong block of British riders, not a clique, but a block, you know, good friends, guys who have ridden together for a number of years. And I think Koenig's at times found it quite hard to penetrate that. And I think he is a fairly reserved character, not the most gregarious character. And I think
maybe not one for the bants.
No, and maybe he would be better off somewhere else. Maybe he will thrive in a different environment. That's my hunch.
Well, he certainly thrived leading a small team, and perhaps that would be an option for him to return to a smaller team and lead. But he's fifth overall in the Vuelta. He's riding extremely well. And as I said earlier, he looked cool as a cucumber at the top. It really didn't seem to have taken that much out of him. Let's leave it there, shall we, Daniel? We've got another big day tomorrow. Let's return then. And
Subida al Naranco, isn't it? The famous...
I'm one day at a time, Daniel.
The famous Naranco climb used to be the venue, used to be the finish. Well, the very famous race Subida al Naranco was a one-day race won a few years ago by a Romain Sicard when he was still an amateur. Doesn't exist now as a professional race, I think I'm right in saying. I'm sure I'm right in saying.
Romain Sicard still exists as a professional rider and is riding the race.
He does. And I suppose all eyes will be on, well, some eyes, interested eyes, will be on Samuel Sanchez tomorrow, because he's from Oviedo, isn't he? And the race finishes.
Yeah.
The Naranco is the Oviedo climb par excellence. It just rises above the city.
A lot of people thought he was a Basque, didn't they? Because he rode for Euskaltel for so long. He was a sort of honorary Basque, but we're in the neighbouring region here, and this is his hood. So let's see how he goes. In the meantime, thank you very much, Daniel.
Thank you, Richard.